You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the American League West. I'm Richard Justice of MLB.com, and we're joined today by all five of our correspondents from the American League West. And I'm joined by Alden Gonzalez, who covers the Angels for MLB.com. And Alden Gonzalez, you wrote a fabulous story on Garrett Richards that's now on the Angels.com website and MLB.com. And that is as good as it gets. And you take us back to the day that he ruptured his patella tendon in his left knee. Update us. Okay, first of all, just people can read the story. But the way you open the story is that on this day in August 20th at Fenway Park, he was sort of taking in what a breakthrough season it had had for him. Can you sort of just take us inside your reporting of the story?
Yeah, and thank you very much for the kind words, Richard. I really appreciate that. It's funny because, you know, Garrett Richards is not really a very introspective guy, you know. He's 26 years old. He's just, you know, having the season of his life, but he doesn't really, you know, get too caught up in deep thought or anything like that. And I just thought it was really interesting because he's the one who actually thought it was really interesting because he's never really done that before. He usually comes out of the mound and, you know, him and Mike Butcher just talk about what's working good for him, what's coming out of his hand well, tendencies of other hitters, how they're going to change the game plan based on how his bullpen went. And on that day, he was just quiet. He was just walking around, looking around at everything. He had been in Fenway Park before, but I believe that was his first start at Fenway Park. And I guess Fenway just has a way of bringing that kind of thing out of you. And, you know, Mike Butcher recalled that conversation like it was yesterday. I talked to him about it too, and they both kind of remembered that, and it's just kind of like an eerie kind of feeling because, I don't know, I think maybe one thing that Mike Butcher told me about it was that, and he's just speculating on it, but he feels like maybe Garrett just felt like everything came full circle for him. He was having the season of his life. He had finally come into his own in the big leagues. He was in Boston. It was packed, and, you know, the manager on the other side was the manager who kind of snubbed him from the All-Star game when everybody kind of thought that he should have been an All-Star this year. So I think he just took that moment to reflect, and then, you know, as eerie as it is, as cryptic as it sounds, you know, minutes later he was down on the ground in pain and suffering a really serious knee injury and testing his determination and character like really never before.
And you point out in the story that only six pitchers have suffered a ruptured patella tendon, only two of them starting pitchers, I think was the way I remember reading it.
Yeah.
So update us on his recovery and the prognosis going forward.
Yeah, today's actually a big day for him. I don't know if he did it yet. Maybe he already did, but today was the first day that he was going to run with his full body weight. And, you know, what he's been doing pretty much since the second week of January when he began his running program was he's been running on an anti-gravity treadmill. And the purpose of the anti-gravity treadmill is so that the athlete doesn't really have to put his full body weight when he's running. This is usually for guys who are recovering from lower body injuries. I remember Kendrys Morales going through this for a long time. Yeah. And so gradually he's been kind of coming off the weight a little bit. When I was there, he was doing 80% of his body weight on the anti-gravity treadmill. Today would have been the first day that he does it at 100%. And you know, so that's a big step in itself. And then the bigger step is going to be when pitchers and catchers report, which is the first day that he wants to kind of really get off a mound for the first time. And look, every step of this rehab process has gone great. He hasn't had any setbacks. He's done everything that he's supposed to. His body has responded well. I think the fact that he's only 26 years old and the fact that he doesn't have any prior history with that knee kind of lended itself to a big recovery. But Keith Coker, one of the physical therapists at physiotherapy, told me, you know, the biggest test is yet to come. His job is to get off a mound. And, you know, there's going to be some sort of mental hurdle with continually landing on the leg that he just had surgery on. And, you know, that's going to be the big test. And then once he gets into spring training, it's just going to be about how he progresses. He said that he's been targeting opening day ever since he was laying on that training table and they told him that he could come back in 6 months. And it was very realistic, but it's also very pragmatic for the Angels to just ease him along in spring training, maybe start him off on the disabled list because they have some starting pitching depth to kind of hold the fort down for a little bit. And you know what? If Garrett Richards misses his first two turns through the rotation at the beginning of the year, it's really no big deal at all, as long as he's 100% once he really gets out there.
You know, Alden, one of the most fascinating parts of this story is not what happened to Garrett, but what happened to the Angels in the wake of this. They began August 20th with a half-game lead in AL West. As you know, they ended up winning by 10 games. They went 24-14 beginning that day. And
yeah.
How does a manager deal with something so devastating to a club? And I thought it was so interesting that Mike Socia held a team meeting to say, we have to support Garrett. Not that we're going to be okay or anything like that. Can you talk about how impressive you were with the job of leadership that Mike showed and the players showed in not letting this injury to the number one starter bring the whole season down?
Yeah, it was really amazing what happened, because I remember that the night of that injury, you know, the narrative around the Angels was they're done. You know,
yeah.
they still hadn't caught the A's in the American League West, but they were right in the thick of the race, and Garrett Richards was their guy, and their rotation depth was not very good. And as you remember, every fifth day they had to have a bullpen game, you know, to get through it. And the run that they went on was just fantastic. I know it just gets lost in the shuffle because they got swept in the American League Division Series, but they closed down the season on a tear, and I think they showed a lot of character. I think the one thing that Mike Socia did was he was very realistic about what this meant. And I'll never forget the conversation that we had with him in Oakland 2 days later. They announced that Garrett Richards had the surgery and everything went successful. You know, the typical announcement they always say, successful surgery. I've never heard of an unsuccessful surgery, to be honest. But Mike Socia said that day, because, you know, somebody was asking him, can this be the kind of thing that can rally these guys together, get them to come together? Can something like this galvanize a team? And what he said was, look, this is not going to galvanize anybody. There is nothing positive that can come out of Garrett Richards being out for the season. There's nothing positive that can come out of us losing somebody like that and kind of dealing with the pain of kind of feeling so bad for the kid and just having that loss in our rotation. If we end up playing well and we end up finishing this thing out and make the playoffs, it won't be because this happened. It'll be because, you know, we just so happen to play well. But I don't think there's anything positive that can come out of this. And which is so true, and I thought that was kind of it was a little bit of a rare moment of clarity for Mike Socia, because typically managers will take the easy way out and say, this is going to be a big test for our team, and I hope we can come together through this. But I think Socia, in the media and with his players, was always really realistic about what this meant and how much of a traumatic blow this was. And I think in the process, you know, the guys just focused on playing their game and, you know, trying their best to forget about it. I think what really helped with this was that Garrett Richards was a starting pitcher. And as good as he was, he only had control of the outcome once every 5 days. So once every 5 days, they had to figure it out. And four out of every other 5 days, it was pretty much the same as always. And I think that mindset kind of helped them out.
And I think, you know, just in just the conversation you described in Oakland, sort of, that's why you have a Mike Socia, a guy who's sensitive to players, a guy who played the game for a long time and has established himself as one of the great managers of our time. If you had to list one strength of this guy or two strengths, why Mike Socia is great, when fans see you out, what is the thing that strikes you most about Mike Socia's managing?
I think it's the consistency of the process. The Major League Baseball schedule can be so arduous. There's 162 games, and there's so many highs and lows within a season, so many good runs, so many bad runs. And I think Mike Socia's biggest strength is that he's pretty much like a robot. He is the same guy every single day, no matter what happens, no matter how many games in a row they've lost, no matter how many games in a row they've won. He is a very consistent voice. The message is always the exact same thing. And I think that's very necessary in a clubhouse when you have such a marathon of a season and so many highs and lows. I'll never forget when they clinched a playoff berth earlier this year. They hadn't clinched the division yet. They just clinched the playoff berth, which, you know, in this day and age, it really means nothing, because you're only guaranteed one extra game. You have to win it. The key is winning the division. Mike Swisher got up on that podium, and, you know, everybody wanted to ask him about clinching a playoff berth because they hadn't been to the playoffs in 5 years, and they had these hats set up on the podium on the dais with the postseason emblem on the side. He got to the podium, and he just shoved them both out of the way, and he deflected any question about the playoffs. He didn't even want to hear it because, in his mind, they hadn't made the playoffs yet. You know, even though it would have been a great accomplishment because they hadn't been there in a while and because Garrett Richards went down, the fact that they had only locked up a wild card berth meant absolutely nothing to him. The message remained the same. It was the next day, the next day, the next day. And I think that's big for a team throughout the season, but I think it magnifies when a team goes through such a traumatic injury like the one with Garrett. I think the consistency of a message like that is what really could pull a team through.
Absolutely, and it's great. I love watching guys who lead groups of men like this and do it through adversity. But anyway, it's been a great talk. You did a great job on that story on Garrett Richards.
Thank you, Richard.
We'll talk to you again soon. Thanks, as always, Alvin.
I'm joined by Jane Lee, who covers the Athletics for MLB.com. Well, Jane, I don't know who invented FanPass, maybe the Cubs, but it is such a great idea, and I think you wrote the A's drew more than 20,000 over the weekend. Your takeaway from the whole weekend, from what the players said, from Billy's Q&A with the fans, what was the headline for you out of FanFest?
You know, honestly, I think it was kind of refreshing for everyone to see each other, just because, you know, it had been such a long, crazy whirlwind of an offseason with so many moves going on. And, you know, all these players, you know, whether old or new, are thinking, what's going on here? You know, what's Billy doing? And I think when they got together and started to look around the room and see, you know, what the rotation was going to be looking like, the bullpen, the lineup, you know, you see these guys, you put names to faces, and you're starting to kind of see what became of Billy's offseason, what was the finished product. And I think it got everyone excited. Whereas before, you know, I think there was sometimes confusion, a lot of times shock. You know, you get rid of a Josh Donaldson, a Brandon Moss, a Jeff Samardzija, you know, Derek Norris, all these all-stars, and you really are thinking, well, how is this going to come together? And I think, you know, FanFest was an opportunity for them to see it. And, you know, when they did, it was them really excited and thinking, hey, we have a very deep, versatile roster. You know, there's no reason we can't contend again.
And Billy did a Q&A with the fans, right? That's right, right?
Yes.
And so, does he enjoy it? And what was the message he wanted to convey to all those A's?
I don't know that. I'm sure he enjoys it. He did get tough questions. It was very entertaining to watch because the fans were pretty harsh on him. But you know, it was good in a way, and I think it was good for him to be able to, you know, address them, not through the media or through, you know, the moves he's making, but to them. You know, these are the fans that year after year have to kind of see so much turnover. And, you know, one of the very first questions was, Billy, why'd you trade Yoan Cespedes? You know, they were still talking about the Cespedes trade from mid last year. And, you know, he reiterated what he's said all along, and he was very, you know, open with them. You know, he's a humorous guy. He's not afraid to joke. And I think they appreciated that, and I think they appreciated, you know, him just coming out and saying, you know, this is the way we do things here. You know, we're not, or at least him personally, he doesn't really believe in the whole rebuilding philosophy. You know, I think one of his quotes was, you know, every major league game is precious and we treat it that way, which is something you don't, you know, you kind of assume, but you don't really hear anyone say it. And maybe it sounds cliche, but I mean, he wants to win. You know, he's not around this game to just throw away a year or two or even more. You know, every year he wants to win. And to do that, you know, he has to work with what he has and his resources. And you know, he saw the team in decline at the end of last year. And, you know, even though they got into the playoffs, they barely got in. And so she saw an opportunity for them to, you know, get younger. And you look at just the influx of players he's added this offseason, you know, the number of years of team control that these players bring. And this isn't just about this year. This is about, you know, stabilizing the team for years to come as well. And, you know, even the minor league, their minor league system looks even better now after this offseason. I mean, everything's just a little stronger. And yeah, it came at the expense of several All-Stars. But, you know, he also created a really deep lineup. And even Bob Melvin was saying, you know, Billy's so good at getting all this depth and versatility, but I don't know that I've seen a more deep roster than the one we have this year. And, you know, you go back to last year and you thought, well, that was a really, you know, deep roster. Yeah. And even a few years ago, but I mean, they really believe that what they've done is the right thing. And I think that's just kind of the message that he was relaying to them. And, you know, hopefully, I mean, I would think after, you know, cause I heard him throughout the Q&A, and I would think fans probably left feeling a little bit better about the A's and about him.
You know, what I wonder is how many general managers envy Billy for having the guts to do what probably a lot of them would like to do, in that, hey, we're gonna look at a blank sleep sheet every year. We're going to start over. And I think the way a lot of them feel is, hey, Billy's got job security and all that. He's long since established himself. He's not going to get fired. I'll bet you there are a lot of GMs that would love to take the approach Billy did, that, hey, if I want to tear it up, by God, I'm going to tear it up. Anyway, that is hard. As you go to Arizona, what are the main things that have to be decided in terms of the opening day lineup and the opening day roster?
The biggest thing is going to be the rotation. You know, they passed Sonny Gray and Scott Kazmir, and it's wide open. That's three open spots for at least six guys. You know, Jesse Chavez and Drew Pomeranz, you would think, might have the upper hand in, you know, in one or two of those spots, whether they decide to put both, you know, in the rotation or maybe utilize one of them in the bullpen, just based on what they did last year and being so familiar with them. But then there's several guys, you know, who could really impress in spring. You know, you have a Jesse Hahn who could really be, I mean, yeah, he kind of profiles as a number two or three starter right now. And they have high expectations for him. And, you know, all the guys that came over from the Blue Jays, Kendall Graveman, Sean Nolan, and then there's Chris Bassett, who came over from the White Sox. And there are several of them vying for just a few rotation spots. But, you know, and especially the new guys, they'll come to realize in Oakland, it really doesn't matter who's in the rotation on opening day, because things change and the A's are not afraid to give you an opportunity. And I think you heard that a lot at FanFest from the returning players, is that, you know, if you were brought here, it wasn't just because you were brought here to play. You weren't brought here to sit. You weren't brought here to toil in the minors. You know, you were brought here because the A's want to give you an opportunity. And I think they're very well known for that. Brandon Moss is kind of the ultimate poster boy for the way, you know, the A's work and hand out opportunities. So, you know, there's obviously going to be an arm or two or three left out of the rotation that you would think maybe deserves a spot. But, I mean, that just gives them the depth that every year every team needs. So that's going to be the biggest decision for them. And beyond that, they do have to, you know, think about who's going to start the season in the closer's role, because they're fairly certain Sean Doolittle won't be ready by opening day. And, you know, luckily, they have options, and, it really shouldn't be a headache for them, because when you have guys like Tyler Clippard and Eric O'Flaherty and Ryan Cook in your bullpen, I mean, that's, you know, you at least already know you have the options and guys who can fill that role and do it well. And that'll be something that'll be looked at. And I think it will be interesting just to see, you know, how spring goes and how Bob Melvin decides to kind of create his lineup. He has so many moving parts. He said this roster, you know, is filled with probably more players than ever who just are so versatile. You know, you look at guys like Ben Zobrist, and then, you know, Billy Butler is not going to DH every day. They want him to play first base. So there's just so many moving parts. And, you know, he's started thinking about the lineup, but beyond the kind of 1-2-3 spots, I mean, it's wide open. But that's a good thing because, you know, you might end up with a Josh Reddick in the number 6 or 7 spot, which only makes your lineup better. You know, you're not putting pressure on him. And, I mean, this is going to be a deep, versatile lineup, 1-9, and that's kind of what, you know, they were all saying. So that should be another thing to watch in spring, but I definitely think the rotation kind of headlines, you know, the biggest storyline for them.
You know, Jane, one of the trademark of the A's, you've written this before, is that when they get a position player, they want to stretch the guy out, find out, can you play here, can you play there, how many different spots can we get you in the lineup at? And I wonder, do they get guys knowing they're athletic enough to play different spots, or do they just say, hey, we're going to put you here, and then we're going to put you there? How do you think they get that kind of flexibility? Do they know they've got it, or do they just start experimenting with it?
I think it's a little of both. I mean, they value versatility, you know, maybe more than any other team, just because of the changes that, you know, every roster endures throughout the season. And you look at last year, a guy like Steven Vogt, he's a catcher, had a foot injury, and they didn't put him on the DL. He went to first base. He played some outfield, which took a little bit of pressure off his foot. And, you know, that's just kind of their take on their philosophy, is they want to fill their roster with guys who can play multiple positions. And they knew, you know, for instance, a Billy Butler, they're not a team that can afford, you know, $30 million on a full-time DH. They don't spend that kind of money on a full-time DH. They don't believe in that. You know, they like utilizing the DH spot to kind of mix guys in and out, and, you know, give them a half day off here or there. You know, especially a guy like Coco Crisp, who's, you know, so injury prone. I mean, that DH spot is important for them to have for him on occasion. So, you know, knowing that Butler can play first base, that was a big reason why, you know, they opted for him. And, I mean, it just, you look around the entire diamond, you know, the kind of outfielders they have, Craig Gentry, Sam Fold, guys that can move around. And of course, Ben Zobrist is probably, you know, their dream player. And I'm sure they're just, I mean, beyond thrilled that they have him, because he's obviously the ultimate, you know, versatile guy. So I think it is something they look for, and probably something, you know, in spring training they do like to experiment with. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, Ike Davis maybe started getting some playing time in the outfield, just to, you know, see what he can give them there. So I think, you know, going back to your question, it is a little of both, where it is something they definitely look for, and then, you know, once they have these guys, they're not afraid to see, you know, what else they can do, because it's just such a valuable asset to have during the season.
You know, I know you are and I am. We're both excited to see how it shakes out, what they look like after this amazing reconstruction project. And I can't even imagine how excited Billy must be. And it's almost that time. He doesn't think about it on paper anymore. We're almost there. So I appreciate your time, Jane. I look forward to seeing you in Arizona.
I'm joined by my friend Greg Johns, who covers the Mariners for MLB.com. Okay, Greg, we're down to it here, about to leave for spring training. The Mariners general manager, Jack Cerincic, has probably had as good a 2 off seasons as any general manager can possibly have. Any last-minute worries? What do you think's number one on his worry list as we prepare to head to Arizona?
Yeah, I think probably like every GM in baseball, it's probably the injury thing, and it's just something you can't control too much. You know, all the conditioning you do, all the preparation you make, and sometimes stuff just happens, you know, and that's it's just something you can't control. But, you know, as far as on the field, they brought in, a backup catcher to maybe help him out there. That was probably the last big move, I think, that they wanted to make. I think they'll probably get a left-handed, maybe another lefty reliever to kind of throw in the mix, a non-roster guy if they can sign somebody. But, they filled all the blanks really pretty early, and they seem pretty happy with where they're at. So, you never know what's going to happen, but I think really the group they've got now is they're ready to go to battle with, and they're ready to work out some contests there, certainly. There's some good competition in a couple spots and some key things that they need to have happen. But I think as far as personnel, I think they got pretty close to what they want. And I think they're not expecting any big additions here in the last week.
I think you and I are both big fans of Lloyd McClendon. I've known him quite a while. How do you think his second spring training with the Mariners will be different than the first? Just talk about Lloyd and the influence he's had over his clubhouse, franchise, et cetera.
Yeah, I think his first season, there was obviously a feeling out process, just like any manager, getting to know the guys. And Lloyd is a very direct manager. He's very,
very direct.
There's no question, when he lets you know what he wants. And that's good. Players like that. I mean, you don't want to be hung out wondering what your skipper's thinking. He's a guy that's going to bring you in and sit down and tell you. I think that's going to be easier for him this spring because he knows more what he wants. Any good manager, you have to see what you have, feel out guys, what are their strengths, what's their personality, what are the right buttons to push. He's not a guy that's going to treat every guy exactly the same. He's looking for the ways to make guys tick, and I think he's going to have a little better handle on that this year, and just knowing who guys are. I don't think there's any question there's going to be a raising of the bar of his expectations with guys, just knowing what he wants. The thing that impressed me last year with him was he's very hands-on. You could see the hitting coach in Lloyd, through camp. He would pull guys aside and really work with guys very hands-on, and I think you will see more of that this year. You've got a hitting coach, and he's not going to step on the toes there, but he is a guy that's if he sees something, he's going to say, hey, look at this, let's think about this, I'll work with the hitting coach and the player, and I think we'll see even more of that, this spring. It should be fun. He was mentioning, talking to him a couple weeks ago, when he went to camp last year, he was still literally trying to figure out who guys were, put names to faces. He flew around last offseason and met with some of the key players, but, you go into camp and you got 60-plus guys, you're trying to figure out who they are. He's going in this year with a firm grasp of where this franchise is from top to bottom, and I think that's definitely a step forward. I think they'll start ahead of where they were last year, just in the preparation and the things they're going through.
You can learn a lot about a guy, I think, by a player, by how he what he does in the off season, how he approaches things. You wrote a great story at Mariners.com on Mike Zunino, the 23-year-old catcher. Until you wrote about it, I'd forgotten. This guy was the third pick of the 2012 draft. I mean, he's at the University of Florida only yesterday. I mean, will you just talk about he? Everyone likes him as a receiver. He hit 199 last year. He did hit 22 homers. You talk about his approach and how he's worked on his offensive game.
Yeah, a lot of what Mike talked about was just sticking with going to right center more and not being pull happy. A lot of it, being a young catcher, he acknowledged, and you're catching that many games, you start to get worn down, and you try to compensate at the plate by just trying to pull everything hard, and just trying to, get and he says he thinks that affected him. 22 bombs, you got to like. A lot of extra base hits. He had more extra base hits than singles last year, which is a pretty tough thing to do, and not necessarily good. The homers are great, but you want a little more consistency, and that's what they're looking for him to take that step forward. And a lot of that he's talking about, just being a little more patient, going to right center more, keeping his bat in the zone longer, and just being a better hitter. He's a smart guy. This is a kid whose dad's a scout with the Reds, and he grew up in baseball. Mike's a catcher, watches other hitters hit and how they react. He went into the offseason looking at his own film, how he was reacting, what pitchers are doing to him, how they're attacking him. And now he's taking that into the cage and trying to work on that. And I think you'll see a good step forward. I mean, it's tough for a young catcher to come in. He's 22 last year, a starting catcher for a rotation with guys who are tough to catch. I mean, Felix Hernandez, Asashi Yukumo, these guys are some of the nastiest stuff in baseball. I mean, just to be catching them is one thing, but guys that are in the dirt all the time, you know, you got to be blocking balls, you got to be thinking, and working with a staff which had one of the top ERAs in baseball, he obviously handled that part of it. He's very good behind the plate. You know, that takes away a little bit of what you're trying to do offensively, just naturally. I mean, he only got so much time and energy. You know, I think he's going to have a little more focus, a little more ability this spring to work in the cages, work a little more on getting comfortable with the plate. And, you know, I have no doubt we're going to see that. I wouldn't expect Zunino to be a 280 hitter, but if he can raise that average to 240, 250, and he'll probably hit more homers in the process. You know, I mean, you're making contact, you're making good swings and play. You're gonna get production, and he's certainly got the power. He's certainly got the strength, and his history has shown at Florida, coming up the minors. He's a good hitter, and I think we'll see some of that come out a little more this year.
Yeah, you know, I hope fans realize that catching is a full-time job, and when you're talking about a guy that, well, he was 22 years old or just turned 23 on opening day last year, I mean, you're throwing a lot at a guy. I want to ask you about Jesus Montero, once upon a time the crown jewel of the Yankee farm system, and it was a big deal when they traded him in the Michael Pineda deal. And there appears to be no place for him now. What is his physical conditioning? Where is he at mentally? And is there a path for him to get any at-bats in the big leagues this year?
Yeah, Jesus is going to be one of the interesting stories in spring. I don't have any question. He did, I think, hit rock bottom last year. There's no doubt. He just had instances on the field and off the field, and came into camp heavy when they wanted him to come in, you know, spitting fire, and he came in overweight, and things just didn't work well. Had another tough season. Got suspended at the end of the year for an altercation with a scout, and they called him in and said, "Hey, Zeus, this is where we're at. You're going to have to turn this thing around. This is up to you." They gave him a very strict program that they wanted him to work on in the off season, and the reports are they're ecstatic with what they've seen. You know, they've seen a complete 180 with the kid. He was down in Peoria at their camp, at their facility, working every day. And when we say every day, Zarensic was saying it was, you know, New Year's Day, it was Christmas morning. It was, you know, I mean, he was there working his butt off to the point of exhaustion, and that's what they wanted to see. And that's what they've got to see. I mean, he's got to come in, I haven't seen him, but from reports, he's already at the weight they wanted him at last year when he came into camp, and he was way over. So physically, it sounds like he's there. Mentally, it sounds like he's at least the light bulb is on. They're seeing a light bulb. So where's the path is a great question. You know, where does he fit in? He's a catcher when they traded for him, and the Mariners said, "Hey, he's not a catcher. This kid's going to be a first baseman. He's a DH type kid. They like his bat. He hit well last year in AAA. Chris Gwynn, their minor league coordinator, says, you know, most of the time he was the best hitter in AAA. And that's the path, his right-handed bat, which they certainly can use. Where does he fit? He's going to come into camp looking at backup first baseman, and if anything happens to Logan Morrison, he's probably next up at this point. You know, that's an interesting spot. There's not a lot of depth behind Logan at first base. So, you know, DH, you got to think Nelson Cruz is pretty established there, but if something should happen to Nelson, they're probably looking at a DH, and maybe he fills in there. So he's got to come into camp. He's got to show he's doing everything that they think he's doing, and then just see what happens. He'd probably end up at AAA unless something bad happens. But, you know, he's in the picture again, at least in their minds, and that's a big step, because I think there's a lot of people thought we wouldn't see Jesus Montero again, and sounds like at least he's going to come into camp and be given a pretty good shot to show what he can do.
Greg, do they think he can play first base?
Well, that's a big question. I've seen him play some there. He didn't look very comfortable. I haven't seen him since. You know, losing weight's got to help. I think it was Gwynn was saying, you know, his hips were way better. Chris went down and saw him this winter and saw him working out and said he's moving better, his hips look better, he's looking more athletic. You know, he's going to need that. And if you're a catcher, you got some athletic ability. He's not a guy, I mean, you saw him run, he didn't run real well, but he should be able to pick the ball, he should be able to move enough. You know, if he lost the weight, that's going to be a fun thing to see. Certainly one of the questions that's going to come out of camp is see what Montero can do at first base.
It'll be good. Well, we're right there. You got an interesting team to cover, and travel safely to Arizona. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you, Greg. I'm joined by my old buddy, Brian McTaggart of Astros.com and MLB.com. Brian, on the final countdown to spring training, somebody asked me the other day, said, okay, look, is the opening day lineup set? And I had to admit, when I got to left field / first base, I don't think I quite understand the competition. Just can you fill us in on how many players are in the mix at first base and left field? And I guess they're sort of tied together, right?
Yeah, I think they're definitely tied together. It seems like there's an extra player here, and I guess that's a good problem to have. And I think at the end of the day, they'll find a way to get all the guys in the right holes and so forth. But you know, they have Singleton. He's going to come to camp with every opportunity to prove he's the starter. But if he struggles, you have Chris Carter who can play first. You have Gattis now who can play first, and both those guys can play left field. Although I don't think we'll see much of Carter in left field. I think we'll see a little bit of Gattis. And if you know, let's say Singleton struggles and they send him to the minors, and well, now you have a pretty solid option, you know, to put it first base, which you really didn't have last year. And you have enough outfielders to where you can cover left field with Marisnik if he's not in center, or if you want to put Presley out there or Grossman or whatever, you got Rasmus. So they kind of built the team, I think, they kind of learned for the last couple of years when guys were struggling, they need some real solid options to come in and fill for them. Because when Matt Dominguez was struggling last year, which was much of the year, they really didn't have a whole lot to put over there. Well, now he's competing for a spot with Valbuena. So if Dominguez is struggling, you feel good about Valbuena playing every day. And Singleton's struggling at first base, you have options now. Before you didn't want to put Carter at first because now you're kind of exposed to DH. Well, now you can put Carter at first base and put Gattis at DH or whatever. So they've really created an extra layer of security here with the number of players they have. And I think it's all going to be interchangeable, and a lot of it's going to be based on matchups, but they certainly do have options.
At third base, what do you think the Astros feel they have in Luis Valbuena? They got from the Cubs. I think he had 16 homers last year, something like that. Well, how do they see this guy as the everyday third baseman in 2015?
Well, I think he's got a real shot to be. I mean, I think at worst he's a platoon player with Dominguez. If Dominguez has a good spring and starts off well, I think he plays against lefties. Valbuena plays against righties, but he's going to get a lot of at bats. He could wind up being the everyday guy if Dominguez swings the bat like he did last year. Then, heck, we'll just give the glove to Valbuena, a guy that hit 16 home runs last year, a veteran player. But he's going to get a lot of playing time, whether it's platooning or starting. You know, I could see him getting the lion's share of at bats at third. But kind of going back to what we talked about a minute ago, it kind of all depends what Singleton and Dominguez do, because their output from the corner infields last year was the worst in baseball. So they still like these two young guys, and they had a lot invested in them, and they want them to do well. And they're both 22, 23 years old. I think Dominguez might be 24. So they're still high on them, but if they can't do it, they need other guys there, and they have that with Valbuena and the combo of guys they have at first base.
Jonathan Villar is 23 years old, I believe. He's had a couple of chances to play shortstop. With Lowry here, with Marwin Gonzalez, what is Jonathan Villar's future in the organization, would you think? And of course, with Carlos Correa on the fast track.
I think Correa is the big one. I mean, it's kind of a tenuous future at this point. I think he had every opportunity last year to kind of show what he can do. And at times we saw flashes of greatness where you think VR is going to be, on the next great thing. And the next day he'll go out and make a couple of errors, boneheaded errors, and throw the ball away and strike out a few times, and he doesn't look like he has a clue. So the walls are kind of closing in on him, I think, at this point. You know, Larry's brought here to start. He's going to start at shortstop. And even last year during spring training, when VR is out there taking grounders in the infield, Correa's right behind him. You're like, literally, he's casting a shadow over him. I mean, I'm sure he saw that. And the kid's coming. There's no doubt about it. He's got a chance to be up here in September. And I think once he gets in there at shortstop, there's no turning back. You know, maybe he moves to third or whatever. But, I think it's going to be hard at this point for VR to make this club. He's got a lot of tools. I mean, he's got speed. But he's just got to understand to play the game a little bit smarter and understand his skill set and what he can do. Hit the ball on the ground more, not try to hit home runs. He's not Hanley Ramirez. just trust your skill set and do what they want you to do, run and bunt and hit the ball on the ground and use your speed as a real weapon. And he's yet to do that consistently so far.
Let me ask you about Domingo Santana, a guy they had a lot of high hopes for. He didn't hit when he came up last year. Where is he in the mix in spring training?
Well, it's hard to say, Richard. I mean, they have a lot of depth at outfield, and Santana really seems like kind of the odd man out. You know, I thought it was pretty interesting last year when rosters expanded in September and Santana didn't get a sniff. Now, you know, he came up in the middle of the season, was completely overmatched, and after putting up the big numbers in the minor leagues, it was kind of surprising. It wasn't a big sample, but we're talking about, I think, 15 at-bats and 14 or 13 strikeouts, something of that end. But it's another guy who has all the tools, seems like he has all the physical abilities. Can he put it together? I think he's going to have to start in the minor leagues, and he's really going to have to work his tail off and do really well down there to get to Houston, because they're going to carry four outfielders. And when you have Rasmus and Marisnik and Springer and Presley's under contract, Grossman's in the mix, you have L.J. Hose, there's a lot of guys ahead of him right now in the depth chart.
So fans who are going to spring training are going to see Correa. They're going to see Appel, Moran. They'll see Lance McCullers. Is there another guy that you're looking forward to seeing that fans should, hey, pay attention to this guy when he gets a chance to play in a big league game?
Yeah, well, you know, you mentioned Correa, and he's always going to be at the top of the list, I think. And, you know, he didn't get a lot of at-bats the last few springs, and so getting a chance to watch him and see what he can do, I think, is always going to be fun. If you look at some of the young arms they have, I think it's going to be exciting. Like Michael Feliz, the hard-throwing guy they put on the 40-man roster last year, he's the hardest-throwing guy, one of the hardest-throwing guys in the system, if not the hardest thrower. I'm really excited about seeing him. Vincent Velasquez, who I've been really bullish on since they drafted him, missed the whole season with Tommy John surgery. He's going to be in camp, and he's a guy that has all the tools. He's got the bulldog competitiveness. He could start, I think, in AAA in the rotation, and who knows, maybe he's a guy that comes on at some point this year and helps as well. As far as some of the position player guys, I think you're looking at maybe like a Ronald Torres, rather. We saw him last year in spring, but he is just like a crazy on-base machine who's fun to watch, so just a little guy. He didn't get a lot of playing time last spring, but I think it's going to come down to arms. I mean, those are the guys you want to see, the Felizes and the Luis Cruzes and the Velasquez and all the new faces they have in the mix as well.
Pretty interesting time to be an Astros fan and to be around the Astros, a franchise changing quickly. All right, well, you travel safely to Florida, and we'll see you there at some point. And joined by my old friend T.R. Sullivan, who covers the Rangers for MLB.com. T.R., you had a great story this week on Robinson Chirinos. The catcher, it's a fascinating guy. He's 30 years old, 1,136 games in the minor leagues, only a handful of at-bats in the big leagues. What is it that has impressed the Rangers about Chirinos and the feeling that he can be their starting catcher, at least on the interim till the kid Alfaro is ready?
Well, Richard, this guy was an infielder when he was signed with the Cubs out of Venezuela. And I think it was about 2009, you know, he switched to catcher, and he's still learning the position. And he made tremendous strides last year, and he gives credit to the Rangers' catching instructor, Hector Ortiz, who's now their first base coach. And they worked really hard on a lot of things. And, you know, the one tangible thing that you can point to is how well he threw the ball, getting out base stealers. You know, he threw out 36.2% last year, which was the best in the American League. So that just shows you overall how much he's improved as a catcher. And as Jeff Banister said, you know, this guy still has upside. He still has more improvement to do. And they feel like this guy can really hold down the pitching staff, hold down the defensive part. You know, he hit 13 home runs last year, so it gives you a little bit of offense as well.
Yeah, you know, and we saw it in Houston with Brad Ausmus. How he gave the pitchers such a confidence to be able to get into a routine. Brad Lidge felt like he could let his slider go, and it, you know, you basically had Ozzie Smith back there behind the plate. In terms of the Rangers and their catcher, they probably feel they have enough offense in other parts that his job one will to make Darvish, Holland, et cetera, feel comfortable. Is that going to be his first thing, is to just to handle the glove part of it?
Well, there's no doubt about it. I mean, if you look at the Rangers' offense, I mean, a lot depends on Prince Fielder coming back and being the guy that he once was or close to it. You know, the same way with Shin-Soo Choo. You know, when you talk about catcher in baseball, you know, you got to have a defensive catcher. You got to have a guy who can throw out base runners. You got to have a guy who can block the ball, a guy who worked with pitchers. And that's what they feel like Robinson Chirinos has made tremendous strides doing.
And, TR, in terms of spring training competition, is left field the only part of the opening day lineup? Let's just say that Prince and Chu are okay. Is that the competition in spring training, or is there more to be decided than that?
Well, it's kind of an axis of left field and designated hitter. You know, they think Mitch Moreland can be their designated hitter, at least against right-handed pitching. But, you know, those two spots, left field and DH, are places where guys can win a job, whether it's a platoon guy, a full-time guy, a fourth outfielder, a fifth outfielder, whatever. There are a lot of ways the Rangers can go. If you look at the guys that they've assembled, you know, they got right-handed power, they got left-handed power, they got guys that can run. They just have a whole lot of different guys who can play, you know, either DH, left field, fourth outfielder, or some kind of utility role. So they got a lot of moving parts, and there's a lot of ways they can mix and match.
And the bullpen, Feliz, I think, is going to be down to pitch the ninth inning. Are they going to pencil, or will it be that definite, to have Sheppers be the eighth inning guy? How does the bullpen line up in front of Neftali Feliz?
Right now, Tanner Sheppers is the eighth inning guy. I mean, Jeff Banister has made that clear. And they have Sean Tolleson, who pitched very well last year, kind of in a middle relief role. You know, I think he's going to be in the bullpen. They've got a lot of guys that they can look at. You know, intriguing guy, Richard, is a guy named Ramon Mendez, probably the hardest thrower they have, you know, outside of Sheppers. This is a guy that, you know, could be like what Kansas City had with Herrera and Davis, a guy can be a seventh-inning guy and be lights out. You know, they're a little light on the left-hand side. I think that's a concern going into camp. But they got a lot of right-handed guys that they like. You know, Phil Klein's a guy, John Edwards. I mean, several guys that they can look at to fill roles.
Well, I love one of your stories this week. You pointed out how John Daniels had an under-the-radar offseason, but that he shored up depth. He created competition all around the infield. He didn't make the splashy move, obviously. But I guess as we go to spring training here, John feels pretty good about where they are in terms of the roster, you know, as they try to find out the health of certain guys.
Well, I think one of the big things was getting Giovanni Gallardo from from the Brewers.
Right.
I mean, that gives them a very credible, you know, legitimate top-of-the-rotation guy and really makes their rotation a lot better. And, you know, Richard, we know that when your rotation is solid, you got a chance to be a good baseball team. And that was the big move they made this offseason. And in other areas, they added a lot of depth. They've had a lot of guys who, you know, have a chance to really help. And, you know, they got to sort it out in spring training. But once you get a guy like Gallardo, that clears up a lot.
Yeah. All right, TR, we're on the final countdown here, and I appreciate your time. We'll talk to you again. Thanks for listening to the American League West.